It is now time for our main speaker. Please welcome Aaron from Long Beach.
Aaron, alcoholic. Can you please humor me? Can we bring it back in with the serenity prayer?
God, please grant us the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things I can.
Thank you. My name is Aaron Hall. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Thank you very much, Greg, for the invitation. And thank you for the personality of the group and the hospitality of the group. It's always a good reminder to be connected to something greater than us, especially a laughter, especially matters of the heart. Nine identified as new, but only eight got chips. No judgment, no judgment. We get it. We get it. Welcome. Welcome back to the land of the living. Welcome. I hope you don't find what we found. I hope you find what you didn't even know was missing. And if you want to tune us out, if you think this is hokey, if you think the steps are cheesy and the book and all this stuff, that's fine. But do you know that someone else is sleeping better because you're here? Let that marinate for a minute. And I'm speaking my own family. Someone else is sleeping better because you are here. At the very least, you're not torturing them. I had no idea the damage I had done getting sober. Happy birthday, Tyler. That's good stuff. Happy. Congratulations to everyone who picked up a chip. It turns out this thing is working. It turns out people are taking some different actions and getting some different results. And there's no miracle about it. A sponsor would say that. It's like, there's no miracles around here. You do these drastic things, you know, like tell the truth. And these drastic things happen, like you find peace of mind. You know, that's normal. It's actually supposed to happen. Dare I say it, the book promises. When we take different actions, different things happen to us. And Tyler, the way you broke it down is so concise, and that's been on my mind heavily recently, the difference between acceptance and surrender. Because I can accept a lot. I can tolerate a lot. Our threshold for pain is pretty disturbing, you know, but what am I really going to do? How much pain is it going to take for things to get different? And my sponsor is a big fan of saying pain is the only instrument sharp enough to cut away the excess of self. How much can I take before I finally beg for mercy? How much is it going to take for me to do something different? My life got so bad, I asked you wackos for help. That's how bad things got. I have a sobriety date of March 11, 2010. That's the last day I found it necessary to drink, smoke, snort, shoot up, or ingest any kind of mind-altering substance. If you're from out of state, this Cali sober thing, don't know about that. Sober, sober. Sober is sober. Even the stuff I didn't like, I would abuse. Figure that one out. If it takes me somewhere else so I don't have to be myself. I've got a sponsor who I'm current with as of this afternoon. Several gentlemen are here that I'm privileged that they call me sponsor. I don't know what that means because they're helping me so much more than I know I could ever help them. What that is I have relationships with these guys, with that sponsor. We have relationships. We talk openly. We meet frequently. And the best thing a sponsor could do is just guide you back to the truth. I know some people do real well in the dictatorship and do what I say. And I was never shown that. You know, first of all, you didn't have to. I was willing because I was broken because I was dying and I knew it. The most uncomfortable thing a sponsor could ask you is, what do you think you should do? The stuff that just weighs on your conscience. Gosh, damn it. The right thing. God, it was the worst. You know, this change starts to happen. So I can accept a lot, but what's it take for me to really surrender to this? And talking during the break, I could tell you I'm an alcoholic years ago, way before getting sober. I knew. You knew. Right? I'm fun for an hour. That's my grace period. I'm fun for about an hour. And then things get dark. Things get twisted. And my humor gets a little more personal. And then some glass breaks and something gets set on fire. You know, it just gets weird. So I'm fun for about an hour. And how long is that going to go? Because I'm fun to be with. And then I'm a little unstable to be with. And then I'm just dangerous to be around. And that ain't my style. You know, I'm an introvert by nature. I fly low. I avoid the radar. My MO throughout my life is real simple. Leave me alone. Just walk away. Just leave me alone. I want you to love me, but from a distance. I want you to know me, but I'm not going to really tell you what's up with me. And you ask me these really bizarre questions like, how are you? What am I going to do with that? I don't know how to answer that. You know, that means I have to take down the many, many walls that I put up between me and you. So I have a sobriety date that is sacred to me. You know, AA is absolutely sacred, and I know there's other substances that we have used. I'll just say this once. The only time I wasn't consuming alcohol is because other chemicals were consuming me. Fair enough? Okay, I know I'm not the only dope fiend. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. it got to a point I just couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't take the lies anymore. I couldn't take the masks anymore. We wear so many masks when we're out there, so many different masks, because I want to portray this image that even though I don't believe. And I get tired of hitting these bottoms faster than I lower my standards. I get tired of trying to convince you that I'm all right. It's exhausting. It's exhausting to try to pretend all the time that I'm keeping it together. And I could. We are excellent at what we do, right? We are creative. We are intelligent. We are passionate people. We are an army of kamikaze. You have someone like us on your side. You got 150% and you're all about it and you're all in until 30 seconds later, I check out because I just don't care and I leave. Don't know why, don't know where that's come from, but that's been my thing throughout my life. I just burn this passion and I'm all about it. And then something in my heart, I don't believe it because I doubt. And once I start to doubt, I hesitate. And once I hesitate, the fear takes a hold of me. And I just don't believe I deserve that better life. And I wasn't born an alcoholic. I don't believe. I wasn't raised around it. I wasn't raised around drugs. I wasn't raised around crime. Parents were really young, really poor. But I was taught ethics. I was taught, no one told me like, that's not illegal. Yes, that's clearly illegal. We don't live that way. Like I was Irish Catholic, right? If anyone else was raised Irish Catholic, pull no punches, show up, do a good job, no matter what. And I saw that example in my family. And I don't know where I checked out, but I just want no part of it. I just want to be left alone. I don't want you to worry. I don't want you to care. I don't want you to be concerned. And yet what I'm giving you is something to be concerned about. Because as soon as I start drinking, you don't know which version of me you're going to get. You know what I mean? You just don't know which version of me you're going to get. I'm not a big fan of drunk logs and war stories because you know. I don't think you'd be in this room if you didn't know. The details may be different, but all our lives are exactly the same. Absolute self-destruction on many different levels in many different forms. My first exposure to AA, I was 21, finally got a DUI, finally, because I'm a big fan of drinking and driving. I actually insisted upon it, you know? And born and raised in Garden Grove, especially early to mid 90s, it was phenomenal. And it worked. And I could still go to school and I could still go to work and I could still party like a madman. I know where the clubs have the best bartenders. I know what bands are playing. I know where the DJ, like it was great. It was phenomenal. It worked. Allowing it to work. And there's this other part of my life, there's this darkness. See, I can talk openly about my suicide attempts in here because someone else might relate. Yeah? My family doesn't want to hear about it. They don't get it. How you can be living this life on the outside. It looks great. And yet at the end of the day, I feel so alone. And the more you tell me you love me, the less I believe it. The more you show me you love me, the less I feel it. Do you know what I mean? And I just back myself into the corner. The only thing that took away that pain, it was the booze. It just allows me to be who I think you want me to be, even though that's really not, because I don't bother asking you. I just assume I already know. So I finally got a DUI. And like Christian said, I'm an old punker. There's a rebellion and a defiance that just comes out of me. That's how I roll. I like to say no. No comes very natural to me. I just want to back away. I want to be left alone. Piss off, basically. Excuse me. And I get pulled over. Don't stop because, you know, why? What do they know? There's the cop. And so I had a bunch of other charges and I had to go to my first AA meeting. I was 21 years before even thinking about sobriety. And I would love to say I came in and I felt the energy and God, you guys are great. It's like, no, it's like hanging out with a bunch of narcs. That's what it really is, you know? And I'm sure I'm not the only person who had to go smoke a joint after their first AA meeting because you're a lot. When you're still drinking and you have to be around a bunch of sober people, you're a lot. You're a lot to take. That's a lot of truth. That's a lot of honesty. You're talking about things I don't even want to admit to myself and you're talking about it openly. Holy smokes, that's a lot. And I'll never forget one of those first meetings. I had a bunch of community service I had to do, so they had me sit in meetings. And I'll never forget it. And it still rings true to this day to some extent. A man said, if I come home and the house is on fire, I could care less. But if you leave a cap off the toothpaste, God help you. I heard that loud and clear. I flip out on stuff no one else even notices. Do you? I exaggerate things that don't really have anything to do with me. But I amplify them. I get so upset at things that no one else seems to really care about. And I heard that loud and clear. Like, I flip out on stuff. I've never heard someone define my emotional nature by their experience. I mean, everybody gets happy, everybody gets sad, but it was just that one moment of identification that made me feel like maybe I'm not alone. I don't know what it was. You know, I could tell you were like had partied that way and done all the stuff and you were sober and happy and, you know, peace, love, granola, hippie stuff. That's not how I roll either. But it just planted a seed that maybe I'm not alone. And I had a feeling I didn't want to stick out. So I said, my name's Aaron. I'm an alcoholic. That sounds correct when I say it out loud. I don't know your first time saying that in a meeting. My name is Aaron and I'm an alcoholic. It sounds true. And there is not a lot of truth that's in my life at that point. And meanwhile, I can still go to school. I can still, you know, intern. And I was living a great life. And this whole monster on the other side, it's taking more shape. And it's consuming more of me. And I'm allowing it to. And then the consequences go greater. Then the concerns get greater. My behavior. I had a buddy, Raymond. I was 24. Things are falling apart because I can't keep it together. Because that mask we wear, it gets real heavy. It gets real heavy. And now people are seeing signs, you know, like, hey, your clothes are hanging off your bones. Hey, your skin's gray. Are you hungry? Like, you look really hungry. Are you okay? No, I had a Triscuit last Thursday. I'm fine. You know, like, we just can't hide it anymore. My buddy Raymond, we were down in Huntington Beach, closing the bar down because that's how I do it. And a friend of ours was in Vegas and they said, come on out. We got a room. Absolutely. Saturday night, we're heading to Vegas. So here we're going to do some math and map at the same time. We're in Huntington Beach, Orange County. We head to Las Vegas, Nevada. We leave at 2 a.m. on a Saturday night. We leave Orange County and we head to Las Vegas at 2 in the morning. And by sunrise, we're in Mexico. Because that's how I roll. Because that's how I drink. That's how I drink. It is adventure time. This is working. This is fun. This is, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to get broken. You don't know what lies are going to be told. You don't know what felonies you escape. You know, you just have no idea. Now you fast forward, and just like our disease progresses physically, it also progresses emotionally. It progresses spiritually. You know, the toxic part of it, it grows stronger too. I just don't need to drink more. I just don't need to use more. Like, I destroy more. I hate more. I'm afraid more. So that same buddy, fast forward a few years, and I was living in Orange, and we're in my kitchen. He's a good guy. I don't know if he's one of us, maybe, maybe not. He can keep it together pretty good. But he's just one of those friends you can play records with, you know, and share a bottle of Jack and just have good talks. Just a good guy, you know. But then he wakes up on a Monday morning and goes back to work, and I'm still going. So we're in my kitchen on a Saturday night, and I don't know what he said. I just remember I didn't like the way that he said it. Do you know that feeling? That tone? Don't take that tone with me. I know what you're thinking. I know that stupid look on your stupid face. I know what that really meant. You know, and here's my best friend, and I pull a knife out, because don't we usually have weapons when we're standing in our own kitchen? And I'm ready to gut him like a fish. And all I can vaguely remember is I just didn't like the tone that he took with me about some music comment. And I don't know about it till the next morning, because that's how I drink too. You don't know which version of me you're going to get. And the instability just grows. So now you fast forward, and I can't keep it together. And I can't lie. There's no point in lying, because you just know. You know something's horribly wrong. And like, oh, you don't know how bad it is. Yeah, because I'm not telling you. What you do know is I'm dying in front of you, and I really don't care. And like I said, I know I'm not the only person in here with a couple of suicide attempts. They were not cries for attention. I don't want to be stopped. I want to go, because I don't like it here, and I haven't for a long time. I want to be set free. And I don't think anything on this earth is ever going to make me feel the same way as those things that are killing me make me feel. So we fast forward, and I'm 32 years old, and the highlight of my day is panhandling around Santa Ana, not losing control of my bowels, and that's as good as it's going to get. And now I'm ready. Now I'm ready for something different. See, I wanted things to be different. I just didn't want to change. Does that make sense? I just want to wake up and like find a big sack of cash and like, here's a new key to the new life, and you know, walk through it. I want it to be like that. And it doesn't work that way. I got to be thoroughly beaten, thoroughly broken. If you're new, I truly hope you are lost, lonely, broken, and scared. I truly hope you are lost, lonely, broken, and scared. We can work with that. We relate to that. You got some other ideas still, like, please handle it. Handle. I would never encourage, especially in this day and age, we've talked about it before. I can never encourage. We used to say that. If you're not done, go get done. I can't tell that to anybody these days, because they're probably not going to come back with all the stuff that's going around. Whatever you need to be convinced with, please do it. You know, I had made some calls. I did not go through treatment. I didn't go through rehab. I never did the Great American Sober Living Shuffle. I just, when I had enough, I had enough. I ended up at a lovely little place in downtown Long Beach called Redgate. You know, no frills, county funded, plastic mat to flop around in. Ain't no narcotic detox going on here. Oh, you're hungry? There might be an apple over there. You know, I needed it raw. I needed it raw. I needed to feel what untreated alcoholism really is. Because if you're new, please understand, you walk out the door, the disease will be treated. Chemically, spiritually. Something is going to happen. Guaranteed, something is going to happen. Chemically, spiritually, it's going to get treated one way, shape, or form. And thank goodness for that period of rawness. Praying? Absolutely not. Tell you I'm not okay? Absolutely not. I'm sitting in a detox with other people who are in the same boat, but tell you that I just know I don't know what to do. I accepted my alcoholism a long, long time ago, but I wasn't willing to do anything about it. It's that surrender that makes all the difference. People talk about that gift of desperation. Sure, when I'm desperate, that's a gift, but it also means I got some tricks up my sleeve too. When I'm desperate, yeah, I want some help, and I got some other angles I'm trying to figure out. I'm not leaving an open door. The surrender was the letting go of it. I can't figure this living, breathing thing out. I don't wake up and just be okay with life. I will keep drinking until I can't physically pick it up anymore. That's how I drink. And thank goodness you remove it. You remove all the stuff from my system, and I'm physically sober, and I am a raw nerve. And you look at me one way, I want to slit your throat. You look at me another way, you make me cry. And on the eighth day in there, I made myself a promise. And I consider this to be my first actual surrender. More than just like saying, hey, I'm not okay, I need help, which I told them out loud. I'm not okay, I need help. When I was going in there, they said it's a 10-day detox. Excuse me, did you say 10 hours or 10 days? Because that's a long time sober. 10 days is a long time sober. There were no breaks in my drinking career. I said, I'm not going to leave until you tell me I could leave. And that was the best I can come up with. Because I, like a lot of you, I'm an excellent starter, right? Passionate, creative, all about it, full force. And then what happens? Lose a little steam. You lose a little steam before the steam even gets going, right? I'm an excellent starter. I'm a phenomenal quitter. I love it, you know? And then I hate myself for it. So I just said, I'm not going to leave until you tell me I could leave. And thank goodness I saw different versions of myself at different stages of the disease come in and go out, all with the same intention. Everybody wants help on day negative one, right? Everybody wants help when the back's against the corner. And what happens when push comes to shove? What happens when the bell goes off? Because you've had that bell go off. And I stayed. And I was day eight, a raw nerve. It's all coming to the surface. Everything. And if you're new, if you've been bouncing in and out, I don't know what you're holding on to, but I can guarantee it's not worth dying for. And that's what you're looking at. When I say I'm a recovered alcoholic, I didn't say I was cured. I said I'm a recovered alcoholic. I've learned today there's a difference between living with alcoholism versus suffering from alcoholism. It's owning that part of me, owning that shadow that's inside that still wants the attention, still wants to come to the surface. And I was sitting on the patio thinking about life, thinking about myself, because that's, do that great. And this woman came in on a panel and she just absolutely spoke my language. It was that perfect storm where I am lost, lonely, broken, and scared. And she starts talking about her truth and her life. And on the outside, we could not have been more different, right? She was a Black female crackhead from Compton. I am an Irish drunken junkie punker from Garden Grove. But when she said she was lonely all the time, I heard that. I'm lonely all the time. I have so many friends and I refuse to call them back. I hide from them. If I see people somewhere, I make sure they don't see me. When my family, right? You have an image in your head. I have this image of my mom in my mind crying, saying the only thing I could do to help you, Aaron, is pray for you. I want to erase that from my brain tape. This is what I do to the people who love me the most. I hurt them the worst. And I'm thinking about my life sitting on this patio and she's carrying a powerful message. And I'm thinking about all the stuff that goes around. If you're new, if you haven't slept well, that's because your fourth step is still up here instead of here. This is stuff that just rattles around. That thing when you were 12, that thing when you were 8, you know, it wasn't okay what they did to you. I want you to know that. It wasn't okay that somebody hurt you. Oh. I'll get into the birds too. That's been a heavy part of my meditation. No joke. all that stuff that rattles around in your head, right? It's all these mistakes, all these things, these jobs, these relationships, all these things I wanted to let go of. Do we need to call an ambulance for the bird? Because little popsicle sticks and some. So I'm sitting on the patio and this woman is sharing her truth. And she gets to this part of her story and it's like the intense, the real surrender. And I'm thinking about my life and I'm thinking about all these moments. I'm thinking about all these times I could have gone left and instead I went right. How many times in your life have you could have gone left, but instead you went right? And I don't know what was driving me. I don't know why I was still breathing, to be honest. I don't know why I was still alive. I don't know. I always wanted to check out a long time ago. And she talked to this part of her story and she talked about that faith, that leap of faith that we all got to take. If you're new, if you're struggling with the God concept, join the club. Join the club, man. If you don't want to call it that, then don't. That's phenomenal. We everyone walked into this room tonight with a different version of a higher power, and every single one of us is correct. Trip out on that. Every single person has their own version, their own definition, their own experience with the spirit that is working, whatever you want to call it, and each person is correct. And I'm thinking about life and I'm thinking about those moments, walking into the backyard party when you're 16, heading toward the keg, your friends are there. That one you want to hold hands with, she's over there too. Like there's an electricity in the air, right? And I feel it. I'm a part of it and it feels good and the music's going and it's pulsating. I'm connected to something. Long before I take a drink, I know it's going to be okay. You ever had those moments? Anyone else in here like dive bars? I'm a big fan of dive bars. Right? I want to smell the stale vodka and tea. You know, like, I know it's going to be good. And these people are hooking up and these people are getting ready to fight. Like, absolutely. Let's take over the jukebox. You know, one of those nights. As I walk in the door, it's going to be a good night. It's a visceral thing. Before I take a drink, I know it's a visceral thing. You walk into that liquor store after one of those days, you know those days. Nobody knows how to drive. Everyone's cutting you off. 1,000 radio stations, all they play is garbage. Like you just can't, it's just everything is under your skin. Everything is on your nerves. You walk into the store, but I'm not going to start. I'll get Dr. Pepper. I was a fool last night. People are still embarrassed, you know. And I can't help it because that cheap malt liquor is calling my name. And 5 minutes ago, I'm ready to shoot somebody sitting in traffic. But now I'm walking to the counter. I got a bottle in my hand. Cap still on. Haven't taken a drink, but I'm holding it. And I'm whistling. Because I know it's going to be okay. Have you had those moments? How about the guy? You know, the guy you were waiting for? He said 20 minutes and it's been 2 hours. That guy? Are you moving? I'm not moving. I will sit in that parking lot and I will wait uncomfortably. What happens when you see his headlights? Thank God. Are you telling me a relief does not come over you? Are you telling me your muscles don't uncramp just a bit? Are you telling me that's not faith? It's absolute faith. I had absolute faith my entire life, but I always put it in toxic things and even into sobriety, right? How many zeros are on the paycheck? Well, I must be a better person now. Oh, what mood is she in? Well, I must be a better guy now. Like all these things outside of me, I'm using to fix what's inside of me, right? All these illusions. Once I get this, then I'll be okay. And I'm using all the illusions to fix the delusion because it turns out there is nothing wrong. I'm just disconnected. Nothing is missing. I just haven't realized it yet. And I'm thinking about these things on the patio of Redgate Detox, and this woman is doing her pitch. And it was just very intense. And like I said, on the outside, our lives were completely different. But on the inside, I knew that she knew that I knew that she knew. You know, that identifying, that connecting. And when she got to her part of her story and she said, please, God, help me. I knew that's what I had been fighting my whole life. Not the one I was raised with. Not what you believe. Not what I wanted to believe. It was just something that I knew was missing. And I believe steps 1, 2, and 3 took place in my heart. In my heart. Right? I can't do this anymore because I'm tired. And I'm tired of trying to convince you that I'm all right. I'm tired of putting on the mask yet again today to not act like a psychotic wackadoo and try to keep it together because I know I can't. Something, and I didn't like God, that whole concept, but I believe that you believed in something. I just believed it. I believed somebody in this room was doing something different, and that was all it took. That's all you need. If you're new, that's all you got to grasp onto. You can't do it by yourself. And so 3, am I going to allow it? Am I going to let it? I've always been the speed bump in my life. I don't know if you can relate to that. Just when things are going good, I happen. Just when things are like looking good, I start thinking. I start getting some great ideas, and all my ideas revolve around me. I remember my uncle's band. He was in a reggae band that used to play on Catalina, and we'd go over there. And we're talking, could you ask for a more perfect environment, right? Here's this great music, this grassy slope. You got family there, people giving out burgers. You know, what do you want? Why do I got to go in the bathroom and do my thing? I'm in paradise, and yet I'm trying to enhance it, right? I'm always trying to make something better, and all I do is make it worse. So how do I learn to get out of the way today? So I had a moment in Redgate, and I got a sponsor within an hour. I stayed the 10 days because I that was a promise I knew I had to keep or else I was going to die. I asked a man to be my sponsor. It's funny, of all the things I have thrown away in my life, right? I don't lose anything. I throw it away. What really happens is someone who would appreciate it gets it. The jobs, the relationships, the places to live, the cars. I don't lose it. I know exactly where it went. It all went to someone who was going to appreciate it because I didn't. But I had this piece of paper still with Valentino and a phone number, and that was my first sponsor. And I called him, and he was a part of this group. It's still my home group, the Chapter 7 group. And they're all about the book. They're all about steps. They're all about service. Now, no one said wait. You know, we have a little saying, shut up and get in the car. Because I was dying now, and I needed help now, and I was asking now. That is the time to strike. And we read it at most meetings, don't we? If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length, then you are ready to take certain steps. Turns out that means now. Not in 30 days, not in 60 days, not when it's convenient, not when you feel like it. Right now. Because that window of opportunity, it starts to close. Because that ego is already coming back. The moment you separate me from the booze and from the substances, it's the moment you separate it from me, my ego wants to rekindle itself, to come back and try to do it a different way. And I just couldn't. So we got busy. We got busy in the steps. We get busy in the writing. We got busy in panels. Made no sense to me whatsoever, but I was willing to let go, bless you, of what I thought I knew and let some kind of new experience happen. And I got to tell you, I didn't realize I was so full of hate until I started putting the stuff on paper. And I'm looking back at my life and I'm like, wow, resentment, is that's what it means? Well, that's a lot. Like, that's a lot of pages. And that's a lot of stupid stuff too, you know? That girl in preschool who didn't want to play with me that one recess. Wow, I was 32 looking at that. And I wasn't like so fragile, but I remember that image in my head. I couldn't tell you her name, but I remember it made me feel small. I remember I was in pain and I couldn't tell anybody. I remember that conscientious thought. This hurts so much, I can't let anyone know. And right then, another wall gets put up. I had resentment against Walmart. I had a resentment against Starbucks. I had never stepped foot in either of those places, by the way. But I hate them because, you know, I have these morals and I have philosophies and I stand for nothing. And I want to think I believe in something. And all I do is just, I want to give justification to my anger because it makes me feel good. I want two scoops of that. It makes me feel alive to be mad at something, you know? And I start looking at my fears. Wow, do you know the definition of fear? Negative imagination. Negative imagination. It is not real because it is not now. And what is it you think is coming your way? Good stuff? Probably not. Has anyone else in here besides me ever had an anxiety attack just because the phone was ringing? Where is that coming from? Good news, right? No, it's never good news. Nothing good's ever coming my way. And I become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Not only do I believe the lies in my head, I act on them. I make it happen. Once again, pushing the spirit out of the way. You know, with these patterns in relationships, I thought because I've never punched a woman that I must be a pretty good guy, you know? Until I see like, oh, neglect, that's abuse. Oh, I just leave. That's what I do. I just check out. And the more she tries to love me, the more I push her away. Oh, that's not healthy? Oh, you're saying sarcasm isn't a healthy response to in communication? We got some other sarcastic people here too, right? Like, wow, but I'm so clever and I'm so witty. No, I'm actually really mean-spirited. I'm really mean-spirited. And I say these things and I intend to hurt you with it. Not so much to make me feel better. I just want to cut you down to size. And then we sit down and we do that fifth step. And I got all these pages of all the stuff writing. I got my life on paper, and it's painful. It's painful to realize some truths, to bring up all these things. And there's also a consistency and a rhythm of doing it really quickly because it can hurt. See, I get sober and now I see what alcoholism is. It's easy to see when I'm drunk and when I'm strung out. Yeah, clearly I'm a mess. Now you sober me up, I'm even worse. Figure that one out. Now I can't control any nature. Now acting on lust, reacting in anger, inacting because of fear. This is how I'm walking through the day. This is what you're getting when you invite me over for Easter dinner. You know, say the right thing, walk on eggshells. I'm ultra sensitive, but I can say whatever I want. And I'm looking at all this stuff on paper. And my sponsor, the way our lineage still does it, there's these five really awkward questions. Maybe it's hidden in your writing, probably not. There's these really awkward things that, especially with guys, that we do not want to talk about, things throughout our life. And my sponsor, as he's asking me, he's telling me his answers. He's doing his fifth step with me. He's making it easier for me to believe than not believe that this deal works. Because I can see in his eyes, I can see how he carries himself. I can see he has humor. I can see that he has nothing to hide and nothing to prove. I didn't know that's what freedom was. I thought the freedom is I'm just going to hide behind all these masks and all these walls and all these boundaries, and you're never going to know the really me. And I just become a prisoner of myself. I become a prisoner of the lie. And then you're around some decent, healthy people who are just living life, and they could care less what you think because they're all right with them. Wow, what must that feel like? What must self-respect feel like? What must dignity feel like? And that's what sobriety, it takes on a whole new leaf. And I dish my dirt and I tell them all the secrets and I let it all out. And I take that leap of faith. And as much as I hated the word God, I knew that truth was a power greater than me. And it felt right to tell the truth. And I believed it. And by believing it, I started to see it. We work on 6 and 7. And I would love to say that it gets removed. No, but it comes in waves. And we learn to handle it in a brand new way. Ultimately, it becomes about those amends. You know, I can sit at a park bench with my sponsor and work some steps. But you get up to 9. Okay, go. You got to go do it now. This is more than just a me and you conversation. You have to go live it. You have to go hear what your family has to say, if they want you even around. So I made amends to my brother and his wife. You know, it's a trip. It is this power, whatever you want to call it, started showing up in my life right away, right? Synchronicities is what we call it these days. Synchronicities of the right people at the right time, the right conversation. It all lines up. It turns out the universe is trying to work in our favor, but we keep getting in the way. So my brother, who I just no relationship with, why would you want me around, right? I'm a mess. According to him, I'm emotionally unstable and prone to violent outbursts. His words. He offered me a job. He didn't know I was fresh out of a detox. He doesn't know I was trying to get sober. He doesn't know. He didn't know any of this stuff. He took a leap of faith, which is odd because he's anti-God. And yet his kindness to me early in sobriety proved to me that not only is this power real, maybe this power is love. And I got to make amends to him and his wife at work. And it was phenomenal. They didn't want any money. It was great. Yeah, that was a great amends. I would show up unannounced and hit him up for money. You know, just being a mooch. I'm a mooch. That's what I do. And they said, that's fine. Just pay it forward. We're just glad you're alive. We're glad you're sober. Okay. Something's changing. Okay. Why are people tripping on amends? That was easy. That was great. And then I met up with my dad. I don't know how a lot of you females are with your moms, but I know how a lot of us guys are with our dads, right? He was the cowboy. He was the guy. He handled himself with a grace and a dignity. You know, even if he was going through it internally, you didn't see it because he still showed up and he still did what he had to do. You know, and he was not in a position. You know, my parents were young, they were poor, they weren't exactly planned, but yet we didn't go without food, shelter, and clothing. But I'm such an ungrateful little turd. All I see is I got to wear my brother's hand-me-downs, and there's 4 of us in a 2-room apartment, and we got to eat mac and cheese. I don't see the self-sacrifice they had just to give us a good life. So I meet up with them, and I do my talk. You know, I say very little because the amend was really about what I got to hear. I got to take my medicine. I could think that you're upset at this. No, it was that. How would I know that unless I ask and then listen? And he laid into me for 20 minutes. He laid into me for 20 minutes and he made it real clear. Yeah, you're sober now. And? Oh, you're 32. You're trying to get it together. Do you want a trophy? Kinda. That's a big deal around here, you know? Where else are you going to come into a room of people? Say, hey, the government gave me my kids back. Yay! And everyone's happy. I finally got a license. Oh my God, that's great. Like these simple little tasks. Where else in this world is hopeless and desperate a winning combination besides Alcoholics Anonymous? Thank you. And so, he says what he's going to say. Bless you. He says what he has to say, but he finishes it with saying, just keep doing what you're doing because we've noticed the difference. And for me, that was like John Wayne said, I could ride his horse. You know, like that was a big deal because it wasn't coming from a place of, I want to impress you. I don't know what, if you still hate me, you have every right to. Part of my deal is owning up to what I've done to you, seeing the damage, listening with your own words. And we're such arrogant weasels. You know, here we destroy, I don't know about you, the people in my life that I hurt, I did it for years. The people who love me the most, I hurt the worst for years. Why? Because I could, because you let me. Of course I'm going to take advantage of you. Of course I'm going to milk your emotions. Of course I'm going to manipulate you. You're allowing it. For years and years and years, I tortured people and I hurt people and I scared people, sometimes putting them in very dangerous situations, right? And it comes to amends, right? A 20-minute talk, oh, I don't know if I could listen to that. Like all the stuff I had done for years, how arrogant of me to think that you don't have a right to say what's on your mind and what's on your heart. And I listened to it. And, you know, you fast forward. And I didn't know what the amends was with my dad until I was a year sober and he got cancer. And I saw, not as a living in amends, but, oh, this is what it means to be a good son. Huh. And I show up. And he has a big surgery and he needs stuff done. And I show up. Because that's what you people taught me to do. To shut up and suit up and show up. The results, I can't change him. I can't convince him of anything, but I can be there consistently and be available when something needs to go on. And I can be inconvenienced, right? That's the difference between that self-sacrifice versus the suffering. I can endure a little self-sacrifice knowing it's going to be the greater good. And you fast forward, that aunt who I used her address to get into Redgate because I didn't have one. And it was no questions asked, whatever you need, nephew. And I go back and I make that amends to her. And her husband is one of us, and he is strapped in a hospital bed, dying of alcoholism, and they asked me to go talk to him. That ain't me. I'm not the Calvary. You know, you may call me when you're in dire straits, but it's not for help. You know what I mean? You call me at the last minute. It's not because things are good. And I show up and Uncle Randy wanted no help. He didn't want to get sober. He died of alcoholism. Aunt Cindy didn't take it too well. So I get a call from Dad a little time later and saying, hey, do you know of a facility? Because Aunt Cindy tried to kill herself. And it turns out by being involved and being engaged and having relationships with these facilities, with these people, with these professionals, getting to know them and standing for something worthwhile. Yeah, I do. I know some places. What can I do to help? You fast forward and Aunt Cindy couldn't take in and out. And then I got put on duty at family functions. I was the person who was to get her in an Uber and get her the hell out of there because she drinks the way I drink. And you don't know which version of her you're going to get. Then you fast forward through the Zoom times and I was doing a meeting down in Temecula, typing in my name. And then I hear a woman say, is your name Aaron? Yeah. Aaron Hall? Yeah. It was Aunt Sydney. She had 18 months sober because she found a good group down in Temecula. And this is like 10, 11 years sober. You don't know when God's going to show up in your life. It turns out it always is. It turns out I keep trying to make things happen and I only get in the way. It's the letting go, the key of this deal, the letting go on a multiple levels. Now you fast forward with Dad and he, I don't get into my talking about my mom, but she is a schizophrenic. And in the last 10 years, it's bad. It's really bad. That same woman that used to tell me that she was praying for me, now I get to pray for her. That same woman that I would manipulate, you know, it's a mom. Of course I could take advantage. You got 20 bucks, you know, I'll get out of your hair. You know, and when she gets 5150, I get a call from UCI. And I'm the person that they're talking to. Guys, I can add a calming force. Because the rest of the family, they don't care. Or they're just ignorant. They don't know. They don't know how to approach it. You know, we deal with a lot of different types around here. Not an expert, not a doctor. I have no letters after my last name. But as an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I say yes and I show up. I don't know how God's going to use me today. I don't know what my surrender looked like today, but to be useful in a new way. I get to bring my mom breakfast this morning. And that's as close as we're going to get. and I got a limit, and my sponsor knows it, 20 minutes is all I can spend with her. That's me. All I can spend time with her is 20 minutes because I've been there and I tried to help. And once she starts screaming at the people who live in the halogen lights, gotta go. I gotta go. So dad, his cancer came back last year. He lost his youngest brother to cancer last year. He had just lost his mom, grandma, going through the divorce because he just couldn't take it with my mom anymore. Like all this stuff was hitting him. And I saw just how broken he could feel. And you know, we are the ones who know what it's like to get rebuilt. We are the ones who know what it's like to walk through that, to keep an open heart as you're walking through a living hell. We know what that's like. Again, doesn't want to listen to me, but I can be available. And he called me and he asked me to go move with him in June, you know, and as a result, you know, I get to be there. And it's funny because he wants me around because he never is. So that's as close as we're getting. And I would love to say all the newcomers, yeah, your family's coming back and you're going to be tighter than ever. You're going to do all this stuff. Maybe, probably not though. That's the power of acceptance. Whatever they got to do, they got to do. And that's fine. They know what they get when I walk through the door today. They know they can count on me today because I answer my phone because I pay my phone bill and I pay my bills. And, you know, I'm consistent in my routine today. Anyway, I'm running out of time, but there's words of a prophet that I love and that I live by. There's a lot more to talk about, especially the guys I get to work with today. You know, they mean a lot to me. They mean my heart. And I don't know if I ever share that enough, you know. To watch people grow and you have nothing to do with it. You're just the hollow bone and you're allowing it to be. You're just a part of it. You're along for the ride. It's mind blowing. You know, I sponsor sponsors, by the way. The only time Valentino made it real clear, you're only doing this work so you can help someone else. That's when it'll come full circle and you'll see the true depth of this thing. Anywhere, there's words of a prophet that I live by. And if you're new and if you're struggling with that concept of a higher power, God, Jesus, Allah, Buddha, Muhammad, use all of it, use none of it, whatever, who cares? It's nobody else's business. If a fortune cookie saves your life because of its wisdom, let it. Who are you to say no? I'm a Dr. Seuss guy myself. Dr. Seuss said, don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened. And for me, that encapsulates everything the steps, the traditions, and the principles stand for. Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. Do you realize, here's a fun fact, do you realize every single thing that you have ever done, every single word that you have ever said, every action you have ever taken, everything that you have ever felt, every single thing that has ever happened in your life has allowed us all to have this moment right now? It all makes sense. Who says you have to understand it? It's all happening as it's meant to happen. There is a flow to things. And when I'm in the flow, I'm right with God. And when I'm right with God, I travel light. You know, anything within God can't be destroyed. Anything outside of God's going to destroy itself. If you don't want to call it God, then you don't have to call it God. But I know that everything makes time. Everything is perfect. It's me and my thinking that gets in the way and screws the whole thing up. Anyway, if you're new, welcome back to the land of the living. Welcome to the world's biggest organization that nobody wants to join. You know what? I hope you get active. I hope you stay engaged and I hope you allow yourself a better life. So thank you.